we got ghosts till they fin. So root for the home team, time to win.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus pledged $50 million toward a downtown stadium for the Crew Soccer Club and to renovate Mopfrey Stadium for other things. Columbus Dispatch reporter Bill Bush recently revealed that another set of records, another budget, puts the city's share of the project closer to twice the publicly pledged amount. Bill Bush was unable to join us. WSU reporter Adora Nabigadeh has been covering this story. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
Listeners, we did invite any representative from the city and the Crew Soccer Club to join us. We were told there was no one available. All right, so what was the publicly pledged $50 million for? Back when the city said, we pledge $50 million, what was that for?
Right, that $50 million was supposed to go toward infrastructure around the stadium. So things that would help build up the new neighborhood that the city planned on calling Confluence Village. That's the new neighborhood that's going to surround the stadium site. So there's supposed to be mixed-use development, different businesses that go up, different housing. The city also said they would make a special commitment to a certain number of affordable housing developments in that area. So things that would build up the neighborhood in general and things that would go toward infrastructure.
All right. So the documents that Bill Bush acquired through public records requests revealed a second set of spending plans. And, you know, at first blush, I'm thinking, well, a lot of that has to do with infrastructure around the stadium, but it's not part of that $50 million. One thing is burying an overhead high voltage line.
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to cost? I mean, can you just give us a rundown of what else is outside of that $50
million? It's tricky because, well, you know, I spoke to the mayor the week that article was published, and, you know, he doesn't consider those additional costs in Bill Bush's article to be a part of the stadium infrastructure. He considers it more to be the general infrastructure of that neighborhood. So
they were spending money on anyway?
Yeah.
Did we know about that, though?
We did not know about that. No, we did not know about that. So,
okay.
But then the city says in defense that, hey, well, this is really doesn't have anything to do with the stadium necessarily.
Let's talk about the 600-plus car parking garage that's going to be erected next door. Steve Shaney, the then city development director, mm-hmm. said in response to questions about that would be a moneymaker for the city.
Right.
But at second, on second thought, maybe not.
That's what's interesting. He says, well, at least it will be paid back by people parking in that garage. The city will basically make that money back over time. That's his argument. But no, you're right, Ann. That's a great question. I'm not really sure what to say.
Relocating a cell tower, was that part of what they were already going to do that we knew of?
Not that we knew of.
A new Riverside Park.
Yes, that we knew about. And then like a pedestrian bridge.
Those were already planned.
Yeah, planned to help build up Confluence Village.
Okay. Completing environmental remediation. What's that?
That is a great question. That is a great question. I just know that before the team officially bought the land, Haslam Sports Group, before they officially bought the land, that they had access to the Crew site in order to do that remediation. I'm not sure what that all entails, but I know that before they officially bought the land, they were able to access the site to do that remediation.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're taking a closer look at the city's share of developing the area in and around the new planned new Crew Stadium. The city pledged that it would be spending $50 million on the project for things like affordable housing, mixed-use development, infrastructure around the stadium. Now, Bill Bush of the Columbus Dispatch revealed that through city records that there's another nearly 50 or a little bit more than $50 million in spending plan for that area. Bill Bush was unable to join us today. We were told that no representatives from the city or the Crew Soccer Club were available to join us today. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What about altering storm sewers and those kinds of things? Was that part of the $50 million or outside of it?
So part of the original $50 million,
mm-hmm.
that was not specifically highlighted as part of the original $50 million, but it could have been a part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Right.
What did the mayor say again about all of this? He's saying that everybody should have known this. These other records were available.
Well, he didn't necessarily say that. He just said that that Bill Bush's reporting didn't reveal anything new or anything that we should be shocked by. He said that additional $50 million revealed in Bill Bush's reporting does not necessarily relate directly to the crew. And so he said that the original number he said of $50 million is a number that he stands by, because all these other things that the city is spending money on, they would have spent money on anyway to build up the area.
So if the city didn't do any of that other stuff, the crew stadium would still go up.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Many of the additional obligations were enumerated in a special contract section titled Other Public Infrastructure Projects. But that section vanished, according to Bill Bush's story, at the request of the mayor's office. Mm-hmm. That's from an attorney for the city. What do we know about what happened there?
Yeah, when I asked the mayor about that, he wouldn't directly comment. He just kept saying, I stand behind the $50 million figure. I stand behind the $50 million figure. We are not changing anything. This additional reporting does not reveal a change in numbers.
When asked whether the city received all of the parking revenue, just to go back to the parking garage thing, which mm-hmm. is significant, Steve Shaney said, can I promise you 100% that won't change? No, because not everything is signed, sealed, and delivered.
Right.
What does that have to do with anything? If the parking garage, what did the mayor say about the parking garage? It has nothing to do with the crew stadium?
He just said that the parking garage would help build up the general area. So not necessarily that it has nothing to do with the stadium, but that it's not a direct cost related to the stadium. And so that's not a cost that he felt the city needed to account for when he was explaining that $50 million figure.
And if the power lines, I guess there's a really big power line that goes over the area. If that stood, the stadium would still go up?
That's a great question.
They didn't have to spend up to $10 million burying that?
That's a great question. And it's definitely a lot of semantics, I think, honestly.
How does the crew respond to all of this?
The crew did not directly comment on these numbers.
They won't comment on any of it?
Mm-mm.
In one spreadsheet circulated among city officials in March, this is from Bill Bush's story, mm-hmm. Updated project budget and timeline. City Auditor Megan Kilgore tallied up what at the time were project costs, almost $98 million split between two buckets, $50 million and other projects, right?
Yes.
Has she responded to any of this?
I have not spoken to her, so I honestly don't know. I just know that the stuff in the other projects are formally city obligations under the draft development contract that the crew has mm-hmm. with the city.
The city pulled all this together pretty quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, can you give us a little bit of a timeline about when this happened? It started last December, January?
Right. So the Haslam Sports Group bought the crew at the end of this year, or at the end of 2018, excuse me. So then we went into 2019 and the team is still playing in Moffrey, with the goal of playing in the new crew stadium by July 2021. So the land was not officially acquired until the day of the groundbreaking, which was last week.
Yeah, which is kind of at the 11th hour.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So that morning around 10 a.m., the land was officially purchased, and then 3 hours later, we went to the groundbreaking.
And how did the city figure into all of this? Did it matter?
Well, the city technically didn't matter because the city technically was not buying the land. But I did speak to the mayor the day before the groundbreaking, so the day before the land was bought, and I asked him, do you have any idea when the land will be officially purchased? And he just said, I trust that they'll purchase the land.
Early on, a lot of the obligations are spelled out these additional obligations were spelled out in a special contract section titled Other Public Infrastructure Projects. And that's what vanished at the request of the mayor's office. Had you ever seen that before?
I had never seen that.
And one city document valued the city's parcel, which is another issue.
Right.
The city is donating city land. Mm-hmm. What's that worth?
I don't know how much that land is worth, but potentially millions of dollars, according to estimates out there.
And what is the basis for donating the land? Who are they donating it to? The crew?
Yeah, they're giving it to the crew.
And how did the mayor respond to that?
He just kept saying this $50 million figure is the figure that we stand behind.
And that includes the donated land? Are they saying that's part of the $50 million figure or not?
He didn't say that, but I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I just know that he said $50 million is the number that the city stands behind.
Huh. Yeah, we don't want to put words in the mayor's mouth either. We invited the mayor or one of his spokespersons to join us for the program, and they said they couldn't. We invited them last week. They said they couldn't make anybody available for us today. But we do have the mayor responding to Adora and Amiga Day on some of this stuff. So let's listen to what we have.
This has never been about soccer. This has been about those public policy goals. And now this new stadium that, you know, the private sector is going to invest $300 million into and, you know, over $1 billion into the district from the private sector.
And that's kind of what he kept saying over and over again. Mm-hmm. That's his response. If you have a question or comment, we'll try to answer them. Or a comment. What do you think about the city spending? I'm trying to think of how to describe the expenditures in a fair way because the city doesn't really address them. But this ancillary expenditures that may or may not be related to the crew's agreement to build a stadium, over by how do we describe
by Huntington Park.
By Huntington Park, right? So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's also the remediation cost, and we don't know what that's to remediate.
Right. I just know that the land needs fixing somehow in preparation for the stadium, but I don't know what
it is directly related to the stadium, though.
The remediation.
Yeah.
Well, so I talked to someone with the Haslam Sports Group, the vice president, his name is Ted Taiwang, this summer. I don't remember what month, but I spoke to him this summer, and he said that the crew had access to the land in order to do remediation, but we didn't discuss it any further. But that's all the info I have.
Okay.
Regarding that.
We'll continue our conversation. We're also going to talk about the philosophy of public funding for or public-private partnerships when it comes to things like professional sports organizations. Again, questions or comments, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus pledged $50 million toward a downtown stadium for the Crew Soccer Club and to renovate Moffrey Stadium for some other purposes. The Columbus Dispatch has revealed that another set of records, another sort of budget that puts the cost of the city closer to twice the pledged amount. Mayor Andrew Ginther has defended the plans, saying that any additional spending in the arena district is unrelated to the planned new stadium. But city emails and spreadsheets have told another story. We've been taking a look at the numbers earlier today with one of my guests, WOSU reporter Adora Namigade. Victor Matheson is a former Major League Soccer referee and current professor of economics and accounting at the College of the Holy Cross. He studies the economic impact of sports events and venues. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me back again.
Listeners, we invited any representative from the city and the Crew Soccer Club to join us last week. We were told there was no one available today. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Victor, we hear all the time, particularly in a city like Columbus, about the economic impact of sports, big time sports, whether it's big time college sports or professional sports like NHL or, professional soccer. What is really known about the economic impact? What are we talking about when we talk about that?
So what we know, and this is from about 25 years of good peer-reviewed academic research, what we know that is sports in a gross sense is actually very big, right? I mean, you can't ignore the fact that, what, 7-8 weekends in the fall here in at Ohio State, you've got 100,000 people filling up the horseshoe. We can't deny that there are hundreds of thousands of people go to the Blue Jackets, hundreds of thousands who go to the Columbus Crew. But in a net sense, that is how much additional economic impact you get from sports. Again, economists looking at this who are not associated with the leagues and the teams, we get essentially zero or very small impact from sports. We get numbers that are maybe are a fraction what the boosters are saying. As a good rule of thumb, economists will say, take whatever the boosters are telling you, move the decimal point one place to the left, and that's actually a pretty good guess of what the true economic impact for the city really is.
Adoran Amikadei, has the city said what the economic impact is expected from something like the Crew SC?
They haven't put a specific dollar amount on it. They just stress that it's going to be a worthwhile investment. And I think just the fact that they fought so hard to keep the team here shows that they at least believe that.
They at least believe it. Victor Matheson, there is a lot. This has been getting increasingly, familiar, the idea of cities battling each other, not for companies, but for sports teams.
That's exactly right. Of course, the reason that Columbus is in this situation in the first place is essentially a bidding war between Austin and Columbus for one of these rare gems, right? One of these MLS clubs. And when the owners can pit cities against one another, that's how they extract the big money out. When we think about the last stadium that Columbus built for the Crew back in the late 90s, that was about a $30 million stadium once all the costs were accounted for. And that's because, there weren't a lot of other cities that were clamoring to get MLS teams at the time. We weren't sure the league was going to survive at all. And basically any sort of money that they could get was happy with MLS. Now, that $30 million price tag is a very quaint number, almost laughable. We're seeing an average of about $300 million per stadium nowadays. MLS is currently in the midst of a $4 billion stadium construction boom.
They say jobs are also a cornerstone of all of this. Adoran Amikadei, describe how many jobs and what kinds of jobs?
Well, they just stressed that they want to have a high number of female and minority business owners and contractors involved in the project. I don't remember the exact figure, but that is one of their main points, that they want to have a high number of female and minority people involved.
Hmm. Is that a familiar refrain, Victor Matheson?
Yeah. So you always claim things like jobs, like tax revenues, like property values. And sometimes we do see small bumps in these sort of things. But the problem is even a large major professional sports team actually doesn't generate too many full-time year-round jobs. The players, and that's, of course, where the real money is, the coaches, that's where the real money is. None of those are typically local Columbus residents. They're not, the Crew isn't putting an ad in the paper for a new center midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're talking about is some front office staff, but these are not big employers. And then you're talking about a bunch of minimum wage temporary jobs, serving beer, serving soda, serving popcorn at the games. But even if you've got hundreds of game day staff, that only translates into a small handful of full-time year-round equivalent jobs. So, for example, a typical Macy's department store will have as many full-time year-round employees equivalent as an NFL team. So, one department store versus an entire professional sports franchise, and, the department store actually comes out ahead in terms of actually generating jobs.
Another argument that's put forward is the city's image, and that it isn't just about creating jobs directly from the stadium, but it creates jobs by attracting other companies to the city because of its what it can offer in terms of services and ambiance and that kind of a thing. Victor, is there any validity to that you know of?
So we don't have even really much anecdotal evidence of companies explicitly relocating. That being said, we do know that companies or cities have a easier time attracting employees when they can offer exciting amenities. Now, mind you, we do have a situation where places with MLS franchises and NFL teams and NHL teams, they, for example, have a lot higher rents that people pay when they come to live in those cities. And that's evidence that these are attractive places for people to be, and people are willing to pay more to live there rather than in, say, Davenport, Iowa, that has less in the way of exciting things to do. That being said, it's really hard to disentangle sports from that because anywhere with an MLS team or an NHL team also has lots of other things attracting people to the city. They have art museums. They have exciting restaurant districts like Near North there in Columbus, right? So it's one of these things that it's very hard to disentangle sports from that. There's certainly an element of truth to that. Whether there is $100 million worth of truth to that is probably an unanswered question.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Victor Matheson. He teaches economics and accounting at the College of Holy Cross, and he studies the economic impacts or not of professional sports. Also with us, WSU reporter Adora Namigadeh. We're talking about what the city has contributed and what it will in the end contribute to the welfare of the new or planned Cruise Stadium in the Huntington Park District. If you have a question or comment about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we did invite representatives way last week from the city and the Crew Soccer Club to join us. We were told there was no one available. We do have some cuts coming up from the mayor talking. So with Adora Namigadeh earlier, when the Columbus Dispatch report came out saying that what the city plans to spend in regards to that district is probably double what it said earlier. Let's see, Teg in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Teg.
Hi, I would like to expand a little bit and talk about our priorities. I don't hate soccer. I don't hate hockey. But I'm concerned that the city is willing to spend however $10 million, $100, whatever. But when it comes to another need, they're asking the city school board to forego 70% of their tax revenue to help a project with the trolley barn. What are our priorities in Columbus? Are they sports or are they the kids in our schools? We have teachers who are spending their own money to provide supplies for their kids. Well, the schools don't have enough money to lower class sizes.
Okay, well, let's hear. I mean, Victor Matheson, this is I hear this a lot across the country. What about the schools? These stadiums, by and large, are located in urban areas where school districts in big cities where school districts struggle. There's always a push and pull on that, isn't there?
Right. So that's, you know, that's really where the economists come down on this, is that if you're spending private money for these sort of things, then, you know, we should let private people spend their own private money to try to build their own private businesses. But when you're asking for public money to go into these projects, then you have a real question about why are we spending money there rather than somewhere else? And it doesn't have to be just, you know, we could spend money here instead of somewhere else. It could also be, you know, we could cut people's taxes somewhere else rather than spend the money there. So that really is the question that we're faced, is that, you know, economics is all about how we make trade-offs in the face of scarcity. And again, what we're seeing here in Columbus, as well as in many of the other MLS cities, is we're seeing about $4 billion of money being spent on new stadiums nationwide over about a decade and a half period. And about half of that is coming out of the taxpayers' pocket. And that's the real question there. Certainly government may have some role in providing a regular level of public services to their businesses, like the Crew. Mm-hmm. But we don't expect for most businesses that the city's going to actually subsidize, you know, half of the cost of their new restaurant or half of the cost of their new Walmart store. And we don't see that. But we do see that for sports stadiums. And that's a real question why we see that in sports rather than in other types of businesses.
Tag, thanks a lot for that call. You know, the parking garage alone is going to cost $25 million. It's equal to a 50% increase in the city's publicly stated costs. And the former city development director said that the garage isn't really a cost, that it pays for itself out of the money people will spend to park on it. Then he took a step back and said, well, he can't 100% guarantee that. And in fact, cities typically cede to professional teams the right to almost all revenue streams, including game day parking fees. Isn't that right?
That's typically what we see. It varies widely from contract to contract, depending and lease to lease, depending on how that works. But we certainly have seen in many cases where you have the city spends all of the money to build the stadium, yet the teams get almost all of the revenue generated by those stadiums.
James in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question about the old Crew Stadium.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to know where the money will be coming from to redevelop it, and how will it benefit the community?
Adoran Amiga Day, that's part of the $50 million originally pledged, right?
Yes.
What are they going to do?
So they're going to turn it into a community sports park. They envision that the Crew will be able to practice there, that we'll be able to host different sports tournaments there, from like high school sports, different levels of sporting.
Because right now they go to OSU for those kind of things.
Exactly. Yeah. So they envision that it will be a place where many different teams of various sports will be able to come practice, will be able to come play tournaments, and it will be like a sort of community hub in their eyes.
And that $50 million that the city has pledged, part of that goes to Moffrey Stadium.
Yes,
to renovate that
million.
Area. $38 million. Where does that money come from? Is there just a slush fund out there?
You know, that's a good question. Yep. $50 million.
They just have $50 million bucks. We don't know, James. We are going to work on that. Let's see. Terry in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I had a question for Professor Matheson, if he knows any cases of where citizen groups have successfully resisted or at least modified the plans of cities to do things like giveaways of public lands and siphoning the profits of parking garages to the sports teams. The only examples I can think of are countries with cleaner politics, like in Scandinavia, where they've been rejecting Olympic bids. And so now it becomes more difficult for the Olympic movement to find support in democratic countries. It's easy, of course, in the People's Republic of China and places like that to get Olympic Games, but in countries where there is real democratic accountability, it's becoming harder.
Victor Matheson?
Yeah, of course, we could talk for days about the Olympics, but if we want to talk about stadiums here in the United States, unfortunately, many of the teams have such a great deal of leverage over the city that often what we would term successful resistance against stadium projects often lead to the teams not just acquiescing and spending the money themselves, but instead moving. So the reason the Oakland Raiders are moving to Las Vegas here in 2 years is because the citizens there said, no, we are not going to hand over $1 billion to some billionaire owners and millionaire players to build a new stadium for them in Oakland. Same thing happened in San Diego. The voters there overwhelmingly rejected a new stadium package for the Chargers. And, of course, now we have the Los Angeles Chargers instead of the San Diego Chargers. That being said, California itself has been fairly successful at resisting things. For example, Golden State Warriors, great team over the last about 5 years. They're building a new arena that's opening this year, and that was essentially entirely privately financed. The San Francisco 49ers stadium was 90% privately financed, very little money from the city of Santa Clara. Here in Massachusetts, we've been fairly successful as well, where we have Gillette Stadium. Bob Kraft built that entirely with his own money, with about $25 million of infrastructure improvements by the state and local governments. But we have seen resistance there. Oddly, and this is unclear why this is the case, oddly, the states that have trended the most blue, the sort of states that we think about as being, socialist California and socialist Massachusetts, have tended to resist corporate socialism, while free market states like Texas have lavished huge subsidies on sports stadiums. So that's a little quirk that we see there. But yeah, we have seen some places successfully resist. Unfortunately, the teams always have the relocation threat, and of course, that's what happened in Columbus with the Crew.
Well, Odoro and Amiga Day, was there any threat? Is there any threat of resistance in the Columbus area?
Well, not anymore. That whole threat came when Anthony Precourt originally announced, hey, guys, I'm either moving to Austin, Texas, or you're giving me a stadium downtown. And that's when the whole Save the Crew movement started, and that's when the Haslam Sports Group ended up stepping up, buying the team at the end of 2018.
But no resistance to the city spending $50-plus million, whatever it is.
At this point, no strong resistance,
No opposition. All right. We have another cut ready of the mayor talking about the $50 million that we know they have pledged. Let's listen.
I have always said from the beginning, and you and I have talked about this, I'm not putting a dime of city money into the construction of that new stadium. And so from the beginning, we've said $50 million. Most importantly, $38 million is going towards the renovation of MAPRE, because we don't walk away from neighborhoods. And I wasn't going to leave the largest vacant and abandoned property sitting on 71 within 2 miles of 200,000 of our neighbors.
Okay, so $38 million, that leaves $12 million to do all this
stuff in Confluence Village.
In Confluence Village, and all the other stuff is unrelated. That would have gone up, they're saying, ostensibly with or without the Crew Stadium.
Right.
We will return my guest. That's Adora Namigade, a WSU reporter. Also with us, Victor Matheson, teaches economics and accounting at College of the Holy Cross, and specifically studies the economic impact or not of sports teams, professional sports teams in local economies. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus pledged $50 million toward a downtown stadium for the Columbus Crew Soccer Club and to renovate Mopfrey Stadium for other purposes. The Columbus Dispatch has revealed that another set of records, another budget, puts the cost to the city closer to twice the pledged amount. We're taking a look at the numbers today and how Crew Stadium is being funded. Still with us is WOSU reporter Adora Namigade. Also with us is Professor of Economics and Accounting at the College of Holy Cross, Victor Matheson. He studies how professional sports impact local economies. We did invite last week any representative from the city or the Crew Soccer Club to join us. We were told that there was no one available. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Victor Matheson, you rattled off a bunch of examples of how, not a bunch, but a few examples of how professional sports team owners have ponied up and footed the bill for their own new stadium upgrades or new stadiums. Let's take San Francisco for an example. I mean, why there? What's the difference? Because the market's so huge, they can't go wrong, or what?
So there's a couple things. Number one, big cities tend to have more ability to resist than small cities, right? No one's going to say that if we only get an MLS team, that will put Los Angeles on the map, right? Columbus, on the other hand, might say, hey, you know, we're here. We don't have much in the way of professional sports. This is the way that that we get there. And as a matter of fact, the reason the Columbus ended up in the Crew ended up in Columbus in the first place is very specifically a strategy by Major League Soccer to put teams either in really big markets, L.A. and New York, or really small markets that didn't have other types of teams already. So that's why Columbus ended up there, and the Crew were the first professional sports team in the city, you know, before the Blue Jackets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one, is they have an ability to resist that. And, for example, they completely resisted overtures from the NFL for 20 years. They were without an NFL team because they said, look, we're not going to put public money into this. We've got enough going on in L.A. that you need us more than we need you. That's a much harder statement for a city like Columbus to say. So there's one. And I think we also have just some general resistance to corporate handouts that we, again, tend to see in places like California, places in New England.
A local sports attorney, Brad Adams, said recently that Columbus City sponsorship numbers have fallen short because other companies don't contribute to the likes of the Crew. Let's listen.
And Columbus has not been a vibrant sponsorship support community for any professional franchise, sadly. And it's inexplicable because there are billion-dollar companies here that have not contributed to the sports scene at all.
You know, I mean, we see signs up all over the place when you're at a Blue Jackets game or at a Crew game from sponsorships. But Adora Namigade, what's he talking about? How do we know what the sponsorship level is?
Well, the sad thing is we don't. I asked the Crew to specifically share their sponsorship numbers with me, how those numbers have changed over time with new ownership. They declined to share either dollar amount. So I don't know.
How big of a deal is that, Victor Matheson?
Well, the difference between, for example, a stadium naming rights deal for Columbus and a stadium naming rights deal for Los Angeles is huge. Or, for example, jersey sponsorships. So we might see a factor of 10 times more money coming in for an LA Galaxy uniform deal, jersey sponsorship, than one for the Columbus Crew. And obviously those are amounts that are going straight into ownership's pockets. And the ability to sell those sponsorships has a huge impact on where a team might wish to locate. That being said, look, it's not, I don't think, up to the taxpayer necessarily to make sure that the owner of a sports team in Columbus makes as much as the owner of a sports team in Los Angeles. It's up to the city to decide, you know, are we willing to subsidize a team here knowing that it's not as good a market. That actually very explicitly happened in Oklahoma City when they built an arena for their NBA franchise. And the mayor at the time in Oklahoma said very specifically, look, we're Oklahoma City, not New York City. There's no way a team is going to come here on their own unless we sweeten the deal for them. And he said, look, for the quality of life in Oklahoma, I think it's worth spending the public money. It's not going to pay us back in dollars and cents, but it's going to pay us back in livability. And if I hear a mayor saying that, I think most economists will question at least that logic less than the logic of, you know, if we build it, they will come and make us all rich. Because we do have some evidence that professional sports make us happy. We just have a lot less evidence that they make the city rich.
Let's see. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And David in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning. I'm just a little confused. When they were talking about moving to Austin, they were citing the fact that they had such low attendance. How is building this new stadium going to enhance attendance? Because as I see it, parking is going to be much tougher down in the arena district than it is in the by the old Moffrey Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Adora Namigade, what's the argument for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Part of the argument is building a new stadium and helping build up a neighborhood will make it a more attractive area in general where more people will be stopping by casually. So you look at Moffrey, there's not really places to eat right around there. It's not a very walkable area. So their argument is, okay, we build up Confluence Village. We have this new stadium. Now we're going to be able to have local businesses spring up. The new stadium is going to have the first of its kind beer garden, for example. So it will be a casual place where people can hang out and run into soccer at the same time versus Moffrey. You really have to be going there for the game.
Mm-hmm. Is Victor Matheson the location, location, location? Does it matter?
Go ahead.
as far as where a stadium is located in a community.
Yeah, so we definitely have a move over the last roughly 20 years from suburban-style stadiums where you have a stadium that's located in basically a huge field of parking lots versus downtown type stadiums where you can have people get into the stadium and then pour out into local neighborhood. If we look at Columbus, clearly Moffrey Stadium is the first type. The even though it's not really in the suburbs, it has that sort of feel. It's a stadium surrounded by all these parking lots without much there. Compare that to Nationwide, and of course that's very close to where the new Crew Stadium will be. And again, much more of an urban experience where you can go out to eat both before and after the game, and it's built within the city grid. And we're seeing much more of that, again, as stadiums become anchors for entertainment districts rather than kind of this fortress surrounded by a moat of parking lots that drives all of the economic activity inside the walls.
I don't know, Adora Namigade, do we know if Huntington Field, where the Columbus Clippers, the minor league team, is now located, they moved from that sort of that fortress type,
the
Cooper Stadium, to the Huntington downtown. Do we know if it changed the attendance numbers?
That's a great question. I know Debbie Holmes reported on that recently, but I'm not sure.
I can answer that.
Yeah.
We actually do know that new stadiums at least have about a 10-year novelty effect, and we have pretty good evidence that building a new stadium does have significant positive impacts on attendance, but those are, again, a novelty effect that tends to wear off over time. So you can expect the Crew to have at least a 10-year bump in attendance from moving locations. And even if they had moved just to a new stadium in a suburban location, still you'd have this novelty effect. The question is, and this is one that we're seeing in economics in general, does that novelty effect wear off quickly, or is this something where you get a permanent bump? And the evidence seems to suggest that it really is purely a novelty thing, that people want to go see the new stadium for a couple times, but then, as the years go on, it's as if you had just stayed up at Moffrey.
Questions or comments, give us a call, 614 614- 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Here we have, I guess it's the mayor talking about attendance issues with the crew. Let's hear it.
They have a bold vision for growing that membership into the future. I know that's something very important to the crew ownership and obviously the stadium that they're contemplating, that they're putting $300 million into. They're going to do everything in their power to make sure it's filled.
Now, Adora, attendance records this season versus last season, there was a slight bump or was it? Okay. So, you know, they're kind of saying save the crew people. Get the number, get the people in the seats.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And Save the Crew this past season, they had a campaign, for example, where they gave unused tickets to nonprofits and to different groups to come fill the seats. So really, like you said, fill the seats was a big, big deal.
And Save the Crew, how have they responded to the issue of the city spending this much money in excess of the $50 million pledged?
Well, Save the Crew, they didn't comment on that particular number, but they do support in general having a new stadium.
Okay.
Yeah, they think that having a downtown stadium will help for the reasons that Professor mentioned.
Victor Matheson, the Save the Crew phenomenon is historical in that it is the first time that a grassroots organization was able to save a team. Is there any significance in that when it comes to how you look at Columbus?
There is no doubt that a professional sports franchise is an amenity for the city that provides a fun activity for people to engage in. So, before we even get to the finances part, you know, this is a nice thing for the city to have.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with all nice things, then the next question becomes, how much are we willing to spend to have it? I think most economists would say, well, if you love the stadium so much, then you should be generally the ones paying to keep them here. And to the extent that Save the Crew has said, look, we're here, we're going to be supporters, and we're going to be long-term supporters, that's the sort of thing that does entice the new owners to stay in Columbus and put a bunch of their own money into the stadium. And, that's at least been somewhat effective, right? The city of Columbus isn't building the entire stadium. We have seen that in the past. They're not paying the whole price of the stadium. That's actually more what we're seeing in MLS most days. But attendance was up about 20% for the crew this year. That was the best in Major League Soccer in terms of an improvement.
A percentage improvement, yes.
Percentage improvement, but they're still ranked down there. In the bottom five total attendance, both in terms of the number of people coming and the extent to which they're filling up that stadium. So, again, I wouldn't have any doubt that in the first 3, 4, 5 years of that new stadium that it's going to be filled. The problem is that the novelty effect wears off after maybe 5 or 10 years, but those bonds that you're floating to build that stadium are 30-year bonds. And so what happens to that? Those last 25 or 20 years of that while you're trying to still pay off the stadium, but people have, some of the excitement of a new stadium has worn off. And it's a hard business to understand exactly, why, a city like Boston has a difficult time supporting its team while, Portland and Atlanta's getting 60,000-70,000 people every game. Seattle's getting 50,000 people a game. Yet other places like Chicago is struggling to even get 10.
Right.
It's hard to know why the sport has so totally engrossed some cities and it hasn't others. Columbus is a small city compared to some of these other places.
Right.
But it's got a unique history of being the first city to have a soccer-specific stadium, and it's not competing against the NFL or Major League Baseball or the NBA. So that's kind of some things in the plus column for them.
Marie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I just wanted to give you some information about Huntington Park.
Mm-hmm.
The Clippers, who have been playing there now for about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
have been maintaining the highest attendance in AAA baseball, which, by the way, is professional baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we've
had
a professional team in Columbus for a long time, and nobody
Well, not Major League, but yes, point well
it's
taken.
It's not Major League. It's professional, not major league.
Absolutely. And we've had,
has been through the roof, through the roof, year after year because of good baseball. So it's not just location, it's the team, which this year won the Governor's Cup.
That's the X factor. Okay, Marie, thanks a lot. We got to go. We're running out of time, but I appreciate your call. Yeah, there's that X factor, Victor Matheson, is there not? What if it's a really, really good team?
Right, and of course, it becomes harder in a larger league to have success year after year. Right, back in the old days when Major League Soccer, had as few as eight teams. Guess what? You're making at least the quarterfinals every year when there's only eight teams in the league. Now that we're grown to 24 and moving to 28 teams, having year-end success, you can't expect your team to be in the finals every 8 years like you might with a small league. And that makes it tough.
Victor Matheson teaches economics and accounting at the College of Holy Cross, and he studies the impact, economic impact of pro sports teams in cities, and also Adora Namiga Day, WSU reporter. Thanks, Adora, for joining us, and Victor as well.
Thank you.
That's it. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.